This is UUtah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Radio, airwave, a pigeon with a message floats. Broadcast, a vast flyway where pigeons deliver notes to pools along the river. The fish rejoice. Cast after cast, the voice flies out. The line grows taut, curiosity, laughter, old recognition lured and caught. Cast after cast, the voice goes out, often reeling past into feeling. Once again, Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind, from our community radio station, KVMR. Right at the onset, I'd like to thank the Heshan World Fund of the Tides Foundation for helping to make this show possible, and also a special thanks to Cosmo and the wonderful Black Fungus. I'm here at KVMR with Steve Baker, who does the engineering. You were, of course, listening to Jimmy and Nancy Borsdorf, Hawks and Eagles, playing Loafer's Glory. KVMR is our community radio station. They've just done a wonderful job here covering the local elections, and we wound up, thankfully, with a much more liberal city council and much more liberal county board of supervisors. Of course, I'm always reminded of the old socialist Charlie Kelly down there in Torrey, Utah, said, well, a liberal will hang you, but from a lower limb. But at least now we'll be able to confront some of the problems of municipal poverty that we experienced in our little hamlet of Nevada City. It manifests itself in odd ways. I live up by the cemetery there, and I noticed that they started burying people on their stomachs with their fannies sticking up out of the ground because the city has a shortage of bicycle racks. There was a wonderful magazine that used to be put out by Malvina Reynolds, you know, who wrote What Have They Done to the Rain and Little Boxes. She put out a little newsletter called Sporadic Times out of Berkeley. I have an unusual edition of that. Some time ago, some young fellas at a high school sexually assaulted a young woman there, and the judge, when they were taken to court, gave them just a kind of a mild slap on the wrist. That was Judge Archie Simonson. He said that it was the times, that it was too much permissive, the lax morality, and it was her fault because of the clothing that she was wearing. Judge Archie Simonson said, whether we like it or not, women are sex objects. And that's a quote from the newspaper. Malvina Reynolds heard about that, wrote a song on the spot, went into a studio with Steve Goodman and made a 45 RPM record for that edition of Sporadic Times, sent it off to the people up there in Madison, Wisconsin, and then went up there, and that song got together a petition drive to throw the judge out. I have that 45, that copy of Sporadic Times, and when's the last time you played a 45? Let's listen to Malvina Reynolds singing The Judge Said.
Said, screw 'em, boys, you're only human. They brought it on themselves by being born a woman, like a mountain's there to climb and food's there to be eaten. Woman's there to rape, to be shoved around and beaten.
The judge took his position, the judge he wouldn't budge, so he got out.
Beat a horse or dog or violate a bank, Simonson will haul you in and throw you in the clink. But violate a woman, your equal and your peer, the judge will slap you on the wrist and lay the blame on her.
disposition, the judge he wouldn't budge. So we got out this petition and we're gonna screw the judge.
Draw a true conclusion from what Simonson has said. Woman has to live in fear and cover up her head. She has to dress in poor dye and lock herself in cages. And this kinky judge in Madison is from the Middle Ages.
The judge took his position, the judge he wouldn't budge. So we got out this petition and we're gonna dump the judge.
Alvina Reynolds, the judge said. You see, the power of a song, part of what the show is going to be about is what songs can do. That song had an enormous effect in a really, really sad, awful situation. Malvina was always there for that, by the way. She was one of those people who was able to make up songs on the spot, to order, to be able to write a song about a particular subject any time of any day and have it turn out consistently good. Let me take you to the Smithsonian Folklife Festival on the Mall in Washington, D.C. The enormous Folklife Festival. I was hosting one of the stages. We were honoring traditional singers from the Southern Mountains, from Kentucky, from Tennessee, from Virginia, people who knew the old ballads and had grown up with them, but also people who had been through terrific coal mine struggles, struggles to organize a national mine union and the NMU, the regular coal mine union. Well, this enormous audience was spread out in front of us on that stage. One of the women there was Sarah Ogan Gunning, who had gone through hell in the coal mine towns, losing husband, brother underground, losing babies through malnutrition, through starvation. Well, this was the same time that David Peel was doing the first smoke-in up there at the Washington Monument. And there was a whole mob of people there at that smoke-in, and it was Free John Pun and Jack, John Sinclair, Rock Liberation, Rainbow People's Party, all of that. And after they had the smoke-in, the cops were all there, they were all mounted. That whole mob of smoking people led by David Peel started moving up the mall right toward our audience. And they were on their way to the National Capitol to throw syringes on the steps to demonstrate against the CIA complicity in drug smuggling. Well, there they were headed for our crowd. The cops were right behind our stage. The tear gas had already been thrown and was wafting over our stage. Ralph Renzer, the director, said, "We've got to shut the stage down. What are we going to do?" I said, "Let's put Sarah Ogan Gunning on stage." One elderly woman alone walked up to that microphone and she started to sing. And that smoke-in crowd melted into our crowd and they sat down and they listened. And this is the song she was singing.
Come all you coal miners, wherever you may be, and listen to a story that I'll relate to thee. My name is nothing extra, but the truth to you I'll tell. I am a coal miner's wife, I'm sure I wish you well. Coal mining is the most dangerous work in our land today, with plenty of dirty slaving work and very little pay. Coal miner, won't you wake up and open your eyes and see what the dirty capitalist system is doing to you and me. They take your very lifeblood, they take our children's lives, take fathers away from children and husbands away from wives. Oh, miner, won't you organize wherever you may be, and make Texas, a land of freedom for workers like you and me. Dear miner, they will slave you till you can't work no more. And what'll you get for your living but a dollar in a company store? A tumble-down shack to live in, snow and rain pours in the top. You have to pay the company rent, your paying never stops. I am a coal miner's wife, I'm sure I wish you well. Let's sink this capitalist system in the darkest pits of hell.
Well, now you see why they all sat down. The woman stood up and flat spoke out the truth. Sarah Hogan Gunning introduced me to one of the most unusual human beings I've ever met in my life. Another coal miner from the southern mountains, Nimrod Workman. Well, he passed away when he was about 96. Joanna, my wife, and I visited him outside of Knoxville. We called to find out how to get there. And he said he would drive up to the top of the road to meet us so that we wouldn't get lost. And there he was. He was over 90, parked at the top of the hill, drove us back down. Him and his wife sang to us in the living room there, and then we had to excuse ourselves because he had to go out and finish chopping wood because it was coming on winter. Nimrod Workman, black lung in both lungs, was one of the people who fought to get black lung recognized as an industrial disease. But that man, that lean as a rail, hawk-featured, he could bend over double, put his arms between his legs, twine them around his ankles, put his hands flat on the floor, and lever himself up and walk on his hands like a crab. I've never seen anything like it. We're going to listen to a song here that Nimrod Workman wrote, and he's going to talk a little bit about it, too.
I lived in one little town, Chatteroy. We had went out to work for 18 and 20 hours a day and used an old breast auger, drill up a hole, be drilling on the middle hole, snub a place, load up the dust, shoot the middle hole, snuff bad iron smoke all day long, and took us along about 3 o'clock to get our last hole drilled and shot down. We had smoke all day.
I got rested a little bit.
Give me just a little time. 42 years, it's a mighty long time to labor and toil down in a coal mine. But down in this deep hole, where them bright lights did glow, then back in that dark room, I was spading up coal. My bones, they did ache me. Lord, my kneecaps got bad. Down on that hard rock, on the Sedumi pad, they sent me to a city to find a new job. I went to this doctor and I heard him say both lungs is broke down, you spent your best day. Both lungs is broke down, you spent your best day. Go back to that coal mine, they got you this way. True, they did.
Yes, Nimrod Workman. What a voice. Voice would take the varnish off a canoe paddle. He's a marvelous human being. I want to take you to a sheep shed now, an enormous sheep shed on the county fairgrounds at Voorheesville, New York. That's the fairgrounds where they hold the Old Songs Festival. And those are the inveterate folkies, the folk music audience that goes back into the 1950s. You know, they are in the habit of singing together, those folks. Every place they've come from, mainly over the Northeast, they belong to singer circles. Do you know what I mean? A singer circle is where, instead of sitting around consuming music, you gather together and sing it together. Meeting in a living room or meeting in a backyard when the weather's good. The folks show up with a potluck, put all the food out, and then they sit in a circle. And there's only three things that you need to do. You could either do a song, a poem, a story, or you can pass, so there's no pressure, or you can ask a request from somebody else in the circle. And you go around two, three, four times. Finally, you sit down and you share food together. Then you come back and do it again. No competition. You see, no pressure, and a whale of a good time making your own music. You know, in a mass marketing environment, a revolutionary song is any song you choose to sing yourself. So welcome to the revolution. Now, here are those folks, almost 500 of them, gathered in the enormous sheep barn, sitting on a square. A big square in the middle where the leader is, and they're doing shape note singing. That's where you know your part by the shape of the note. It's a real old, archaic Southern Mountain style of singing. But these are people from all walks of life, from garbage collectors to computer engineers, young and old, 500 voices doing shape note singing together. And I have a recording from that sheep barn. Let's listen to those folks singing Wondrous Love.
It's a little different about Sacred Harp from other types of choral music for new people. There are a couple things. One is pulsing. Pulsing means that you just give it a little more with your breath. And the other thing is, it's okay to get a little excited. Okay? So let's do Wondrous Love.
Love.
the Sacred Harp. You know, there's a whole black tradition of Sacred Harp, too, and a different body of music, but done pretty much the same way. That's an antique brought forward. One of the pleasures of being in that sheep barn was standing in the middle of that square. Anybody can go in the middle of the square and kneel down, and you listen to the pressure of the whole sound. And one of the features the day that I was there were high school students who had formed a Sacred Harp, and they came and sang for everybody there. It was remarkable. Sometimes songs are a little difficult to get out. A story festers in your mind for year after year, and you know it's supposed to come out as a song, but it never quite does. It was one of those festivals that I met the Hudson River Balladeer, Sarah Cleveland, from up there in Hudson Falls, across from Saratoga Springs. She sang all the old English ballads. She didn't know they were old English ballads. She just learned them in her family, and she sang them in her growing up, and she sang them when washing dishes and sang them doing the laundry and so on. Kenneth S. Goldstein, the folklorist, discovered her, and she began to go around to festivals and sing those old ballads. A tiny, tiny woman. One time, I was on the bus on the way to New York City, and the woman next to me, we were having a conversation, and from behind me, I heard a voice say, "Is that you, Utah?" And now there was Sarah Cleveland. She was going blind and was on her way for some eye surgery in New York City. Well, they changed places, and Sarah Cleveland talked to me. I thought we were going to talk about old English ballads. But no, she talked about being married to John, a giant Mohawk Indian, a huge Mohawk Indian, who worked on the construction, worked on the high iron, had worked on the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, and how she raised her family in tents along the road from one construction camp to the next, and how when they would walk together, they couldn't hold hands because his hands were too massive. She would just hold his thumb. Well, we parted. The story went on after that, but I wanted it to slide into a song, and I tried for years and years, and I couldn't do it. I had my father's old pop-up opera hat that he used to wear when he played the piano in the Catskills. I said to Bodie Wagner, fine songwriter, lives hereabouts, I said, "Bodie, I'll give you that hat," because he treasured it, "if you will turn that story into a song." And he did, and then we both forgot it until he rummaged through some old kitchen tapes he had, and he found it. Now listen to Bodie Wagner singing the song of Sarah and John.
The old engine turned over in the cold morning twilight. It was mid-February on the edge of the night. Sarah, she said, "Wake up, John, it's time that we ride. Wake the children, it's time that we ride. Well, a boomer's life ain't easy with a family on the road, but a big and humored man like John always pulls the load. John could stand an awful lot, still come up with pride with his little lady Sarah by his side. Now up and down the eastern coast, they went from town to town. He built the city steelworks where once stood naked ground. Oh, they seldom had a bed to sleep in every night. When they did, they used to hold each other tight. Now John, he was a giant man, and Sarah being small. At night when they would lay so still, as the evening shadows fall, instead of holding hands, you see, he'd offer her his thumb to wrap her hand around till the morning come. A boomer's life ain't easy with a family on the road, but a big and humored man like John could always pull the load. stand an awful lot, still come up with pride with his little lady Sarah by his side. Now John was in an auto wreck, it almost left him dead. He could not hear or see or think, so the doctor said. When you go in to see him, ma'am, he won't know you at all. She just nodded, started down the hall. She walked into the silent room and saw her husband there. Pain that welled within her heart was more than she could bear. To see her husband paralyzed, all mindless, deaf and dumb, she said, "I'm here, John." He stuck out his thumb. Now Boomer's life ain't easy with a family on the road, but a big and humored man like John can always pull the load. And John could stand an awful lot, still come up with pride with his little lady Sarah by his side. Yeah, love can stand an awful lot, still come up with pride with the strength of John and Sarah on its side.
Come With Me to Chicago. That, by the way, of course, is Kenny Hall. I never get tired of telling you that blind Kenny Hall, marooned down there in Fresno, one of the great musicians of the Western world. You seek him out if you ever pass through there, and he'll play for you. Chicago, I said, one of my favorite towns to walk in, to be in, to take a vacation in. I love what the late afternoon sunlight does to that old red brick as you walk the alleys. I learned the alleys of Chicago from Eddie Belchowski, whom I've talked to you about before. Eddie Belchowski spent years roaming the alleys, a derelict, an alcoholic, a drug addict, had his arm blown off at the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in the Spanish Civil War, the war to defend the Republic against the Nazis and against the fascists in Spain. That was where capitalism, my friends, announced for the first time once and for all that it would tolerate no system alternative to itself. And they've acted it out that way again and again and again, whether Guatemala, in Chile, Nicaragua, all over, and they're still doing it, you know. So that was, if you got to read about a war, read about the fight to preserve the Spanish Republic. Well, Eddie, of course, dug himself out of that particular tomb. He only had the one arm, but he still played the piano. Oh, many hours I spent sitting up there in the dark of the quiet night, a bar club I used to play on Belmont Street in Chicago, listening to Eddie play the piano with that one good hand and listening to him sing those old songs in that thundering bass voice. Well, Let's listen to Ed Belchowski singing and playing Hans Eisler's a song from the concentration camps, the peat bog soldiers.
Die Moorsoldaten, the peat bog soldiers, a song written in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany by Hans Eisler. This is a song of the prisoners marching out into the fields every day with their spades to dig peat. Die Moorsoldaten, the peat bog soldiers. Are pacing. No one can go through. Flight would mean a sure death facing. Guns and barbed wire greet our view. We are the peat bog soldiers, and we're marching with our spades to the bar. No complaining. Winter cannot always be. One day we shall cry rejoicing. Homeland dear, you're mine at last. Hans in die Moorsoldaten, nicht mehr mit dem Spaten.
Peat Bog Soldiers, Eddie Belchowski. Eddie passed away some time ago in front of a subway train in Chicago. I can't tell you how much he did for me, how much he taught me about courage, about holding on and never letting go. Those early days when I was playing in Chicago, seldom had a place to stay. You know, I never liked staying in hotels or motels, couldn't afford them anyway. But the headquarters of the Industrial Workers of the World, the Wobblies, was there over on North Lincoln, called Freedom Hall. And some of the old-timers like Fred Thompson and Wally Westman were still there. And then, of course, there were the young Wobblies. We didn't have any money, so we kept the office in the front. It looked out on the Biograph Theater. That's where Dillinger got gunned down after he was fingered by the woman in red. You could still see the pockmarked bullet holes in the brickwork of that alley. But the hall in back of our offices had to be rented out in order to keep the union solvent. And you never knew what they were going to rent it out for. Now, I screened off a little piece in the back of the hall there with a curtain, with a sheet, had a cot back there, a folding cot. And after I'd finished playing at any of the clubs around Chicago, I go to bed there, sometimes 2-3 in the morning, only to be awakened by the beginnings of a Polish wedding or a woman's karate class, as I never knew what that hall was going to be rented for. So I'd pull myself together. If it was a Sunday, I'd go down to Maxwell Street and listen to Blind Jim Brewer play with his little amplifier hooked up to a power cord hanging out of somebody's window. So he borrowed their electricity, and then he split the take with them. Oh, go down to the Quiet Night and sit in the bar with Eddie Belchowski and Jim Ringer and some others that we knew. Across the street from Cliff Raven's tattoo parlor, that's where I got my ship here on my arm. It's a traditional. Thing about Raven's parlor is he had a tattoo, what's called Flash, you know, the drawing that you're going to choose from. Flash, he had this big piece of Flash in the front window of the flag raising on Iwo Jima with bunting and crossed rifles and the whole nine yards. It was enormous, and a sign underneath, a neon, said, if you can take this tattoo in one sitting, you get it for free. Well, I was sitting there, and he was working on me, giving me this ship, and you learn to make conversation while you're in pain. That's part of the trip. And I said, Cliff, now be honest with me. Have you ever given away one of those tattoos? And Cliff said, well, I control the throw on the needle. I can make it hurt as much as I want. Well, come into that bar with me and sit on a bar stool with Eddie and with the manager of the club and with Ringer and so on. Our favorite thing to do, you know, when we first showed up in town was to go play Richard Harding's jukebox up there. It had two songs that we particularly favored because somehow they seemed to go together, so you're going to hear them together. One of them is the old 1937 version, the original version of September Song, sung by Walter Houston, and a different set of words than you're going to hear in the Frank Sinatra version. Let me tell you, these original words are quite more interesting. And you'll hear right after that, believe it or not, Dave Van Ronk singing Joni Mitchell's Clouds.
But it's a long, long while from May to December, and the days grow short when you reach September. And I have lost one tooth, and I walk a little lame, and I haven't got time for the waiting game. And the days turn to gold as they grow few. September, November. And these few golden days I'd spend with you. These golden days I'd spend with you. When you meet with the young men early in spring, they court you in song and rhyme. They woo you with words and a clover ring. But if you examine the goods they bring, they have little to offer but the songs they sing and a plentiful waste of time of day. A plentiful waste of time. But it's a long, long while from May to December. Will the clover ring last till you reach September? And I'm not quite equipped for the waiting game, but I have a little money and I have a little fame. And the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November. precious days I'd spend with you. These precious days I'd spend with you.
Friend Dave Van Ronk. I guess what moves me so much is listening to Ed Belchowski and Walter Houston and then Dave Van Ronk really get inside of a song, really crawl right into it and bring everything out that's in that song. I admire that so much. I don't know why those two songs together are so touching. Maybe it was the place. Maybe it was that upstairs in Richard Harding's place in Chicago. One of the people there was a dear friend I used to board in with at his apartment was Fred Holstein. Fred Holstein didn't make songs, he didn't make them up, but he had exquisite taste in what he chose to sing. Now, here's a guy who could sit with a guitar in an after-hours bar with a bunch of drunks that are in town for a convention out cruising Wells Street, and he could get them to sing folk songs. Honest to God, I don't know how he did it. He was astonishing, but he was so honest. He knew how to sing those songs. Well, most of those bars closed in Chicago, most of those clubs, and 20 new blues clubs open up every week, and I suppose that's okay. Everything has its time. I want to give you a chance to listen to a song that I made up many years ago that Fred Holstein chose to sing. Before that, let me give you a poem that I just heard lately. To Be a Man by Donna Hanlon. When I stop to cry the burning tears I have for babies I never bore, thank the one I have for the experience. When I can see anger out the door, an invited guest to rouse me up, when the house is empty, no one left around, comes my pity for men who never felt another life inside, the cold, bleak life, always separate, always strong. To be a man, what hell! What relief to never feel your own blood flow through another. The blood gone, crying out for it to return, to never feel another heart beat inside of you, heart long gone away from you, to be a man. What divine independence, to leave the family behind, to never go looking again for your own heart, while advising women to let go, to leave them alone, when this is leaving your own heart on the roadside. What you've missed, what ice might form inside to feel so strong, apart, and sure. Men ought to go to war and fight, work, build houses, protect the weak who must watch their own hearts slow beat far down the path. Women must watch their strength, the double heartbeat, the overflow of blood. Women must watch and lie in arms. Women must let men hold them and feel the blood pound against an angry shore.
Touch me when I'm working. Touch me when I'm reading. When I'm not looking. Surprise me with your hands and lightly, without thinking, touch me. Sometimes when I'm turning, brush me with your fingertips. Know me by the gentleness, not always, but now and then. Without thinking, touch me. I've never asked words before, but I said I'm all in reaching, and told you with my holding, but now my arms are breaking so lightly. Without thinking, touch me. Touch me through the darkness in all of my secret places. Lift me from my sleeping, haul me from my dreaming, and lightly, without thinking, touch me. Touch me when I'm working. Touch me when I'm reading. When I'm not looking, surprise me with your hands and lightly, without thinking, touch me.
album again. Hallelujah, give us a handout to revive us again. Yeah, I have taken of late to writing some of these things down. Edward Abbey used to call me on the phone and ask me if I had started to let this stuff trickle down my arm out onto the written page. It's hard for me to write. Not only do my hands not work properly, but I live in a world I created, a world that I can live in, and that's a world made out of speakers and listeners, and I'm perfectly happy with that because there it's invested with the music of the language, and as you've probably surmised, I am vastly enamored of that. Hard for me to write, but I have been, under provocation, sitting down and trying to write. I've been working for 12 years on this book about Idaho Blackie, who was an old wobbly organizer up in the panhandle of North Idaho, up where the men are men and the women are men and the sheep are really nervous. Blackie's quite a case, you know. I've been interviewing people who knew him in the forest, and I found his doctor, Dr. Shaw, a young family practice physician, who was the last one to really give Blackie a good physical, found him to be sound as a dollar. Oh, that's probably not appropriate anymore. So the picture of health, he said, Blackie's 92 years old and in perfect health. Dr. Shaw, I was talking to him, he said, I fear for his mind, though. He said something I don't think any old wobbly would ever say. He said that the only problem he has is that he has to get up at night and go to the bathroom. But the Lord watches out for him, he says. The Lord turns on the light for him and turns it off when he's done. I allowed that was a pretty odd thing for any old wobbly to say. But then Dr. Shaw talked to Josie Bates, his wife, older than him by a good bit, and said, Josie, Blackie has the body of a 40-year-old, but I do fear for his mind. He tells me when he gets up at night to go to the bathroom that the Lord turns on the light for him and turns it off when he's done. Josie said, that old fool pissed in the refrigerator again.
It's a dreadful thing to fade out the International with Len Wallace from the Canadian Auto Workers Union, Windsor, Ontario. You've been listening to me, Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest. You've been very patient with me. This has been Loafer's Glory. the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. From Epictetus. Never say that I have lost such a thing, but that I have returned it.